Welcome to Money, Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investing and strategic decision making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor or an institutional capitalist looking for insights, analysis and expert opinions, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uister. Today is our third episode to broadcast from our Vauxhall studios in London, and I have two very special guests who's going to help me look into the world of fixed income. We're going to dive into inflation, interest rate, credit spreads, fund strategy, and risk-adjusted opportunities. On my right, I've got Jonathan Wilcox, Global Head of Distribution. And on my left, I've got Lloyd Harris, the Head of Fixed Income from Premier Miton. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll kick off with you, Jono. Premier Miton secured Section 65 registration approval in South Africa late last year and now offers six strategies locally. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, thank you, Ron. So we registered six funds, as you rightly pointed out, under Section 65. Two are multi-asset funds. One is cautious and one is defensive multi-asset, a European REIT strategy called Property Share Fund. And then we registered three fixed income funds, a corporate bond fund, a strategic monthly income bond fund, and also a financial capital securities fund. And we're in the process, actually, we applied for a seventh fund to be registered with Section 65. So we'll continue to look to build out that range over time.
You've mentioned in some of our previous discussion that South Africa is a big part of your broader international growth strategy. How does the local offering fit into Premier Miton's global roadmap, particularly in the fixed income space?
Well, certainly what we're seeing now is that fixed income is a major, will become increasingly a major part of people's asset allocations. I think global fixed income, when you had low rates and low yields on offer, essentially became relatively unattractive to invest in. But since everything repriced 4 or 5 years ago, we've now seen a massive increase in fixed income. And now with the yields that are currently on offer, and Lloyd, I'm sure we'll talk about this, for a South African investor, I know you can get 10, 11% on domestic government bonds in South Africa, but you can now get yields upwards of 7 or 8% in international investment grade from developed market credit. And I think that starts to become an attractive proposition for South African investors looking to export their exposure internationally.
As a global head of distribution, you're active across both traditional and digital channels. Are you seeing a shift in how clients access fixed income solution? And how does that shape your message to South African advisors?
No, it's really interesting because I think we went through this period where face-to-face was so important. And then we went through the COVID lockdown period where everybody moved online, digital, videos, etc. But we're now the last 3 or 4 years, that sense of if you want to build trust, if you want to get to know people, you need to have those face-to-face meetings again. And what we've certainly noticed in the last 2 years coming down to South Africa, it takes time to build trust. It takes time to prove that you are going to come to South Africa and you will continue to come to South Africa through the good times and the bad times, because persistency, consistency and trust are things that get time to build. And as a consequence of that, we certainly see there's not many other international asset managers out now promoting fixed developed market fixed income into South Africa. So from our point of view, we're starting to see quite a bit of interest coming through.
Yeah, and hence we're having this podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lloyd, your team follows a high conviction, no house view approach. That's quite rare in fixed income. So can you explain how that shapes your portfolio decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are ultimately masters of our own destiny. We know our asset class. And so, you know, it's quite important, really, that we have the freedom to be able to invest how we want to invest. And, you know, that's the beauty of, I think, being at Premier Miton. You know, that is the way Premier Miton is set up, very much a platform, I think, for investment teams. So, you know, we have that freedom. We have that freedom to express views, to be in the parts of the market that we really think are offering most value.
You target a relatively short duration, I think it's about 3 years, but invest across a wide credit universe. Can you elaborate a bit on that and explain that to our viewers?
Yeah, so what we're looking to achieve in the fund is relatively low volatility income. And so we're not going to do that with a big duration, i.e. we're not going to do that with a lot of bond market risk. You know, we don't want to be taking on masses of risk here because we think there's just an awful lot of opportunities within the fixed income market, within the credit market, and within that developed market credit. So, you know, we're, that's the reason that we're looking for collateral in the fund that exhibits a relatively low volatility. And that is good quality, you know, i.e. mostly investment grade credit at the shorter end of the curve in developed markets.
Since the launch, the Strategic Monthly Income Bond Fund, that's quite a mouthful, has delivered strong alpha and low drawdowns. Can you share a recent trade or conviction call that illustrates how the team generates returns?
Yeah, so, well, it's that's the interesting thing about the fund. It's not one trade, okay? It's multiple trades over a very long period of time. And so just to put some kind of numbers around the market and the opportunity set, you know, just to look at the euro market. So euro-denominated equity IPOs last year in 2024, some totaled 14.8 billion. We had in credit 1.4 trillion euros of corporate bonds issued.
Wow.
Now, within that 1.4 trillion, there's some mispriced opportunities, right? The market is not 100% efficient. And so what that allows us to do is pretty much go through a daily optimization process in the portfolio. And the byproduct of the optimization is that we are taking lots and lots of small amounts of profit. That then generates a relatively smooth outcome for investors, as you can imagine, because we are booking profits, booking profits, booking profits. So it's not necessarily one trade, it's just lots and lots of small trades. And, you know, that's how we build up the alpha in the fund.
Almost reminds me of a snow globe you shake and kind of see some of the snowflakes like, drop in the right places. And, yeah, and those are the opportunities that you see.
Absolutely.
John, let's go over to you. We've seen real yield shift dramatically from deeply negative to strongly positive. Is it the start of a new bond market era, or do you think central bank cuts will undo that advantage?
Well, I'll let Lloyd talk about where they see central banks going. But what I have noticed now is that essentially investors allocated equities for the last 10 or 15 years post the global financial crisis. And if they did buy fixed income, they'd only buy high yield as a proxy for owning equities, because in short dated investment grade at that point in time or government bonds, there was not much yield on offer to play for. But since COVID and since the sort of the repricing of bonds and how, you know, inflation's taken off and spreads of yields have gone out, rates have gone up, suddenly fixed income is an investable asset class again. And so now we're coming to see lots of older investors who've been around pre the financial crisis, who now recognize this asset class as very attractive. And we're now seeing a brand new generation of investment managers and advisors who've come into the industry since 2008, who never really looked at fixed income before, now coming to us and go, crikey, we now realize this is the opportunity. Actually, I do need to own fixed income, my point, because it does add value now to what I'm trying to do as part of an overall portfolio construction. But in terms of where we go next, Lloyd.
Yeah, apart from stocking up on gold, what are central bankers going to do?
Yeah, totally. So our sense is that we potentially this year got some more rate cuts in developed markets, but we've not got that many. You know, certainly the ECB could be done already. They've definitely not got many to go. Bank of England, we might get some. Again, not that many. We might get some out of the Fed this year, one or two. But, you know, it's not going to be an aggressive rate cutting cycle, this one, because, you know, we've got government expenditure that is quite aggressive, really, and continuing to be quite aggressive. You know, there's an awful lot of fiscal expenditure. And that implies to us that inflation is going to remain a little bit sticky. You know, economies are going to continue to grow, certainly in nominal terms. And also, we're going to get quite a bit of bond issuance. And so, you know, you kind of add it all up and you think that actually we are not going back to zero interest rate policy in developed markets anytime soon. So this is a very shallow cutting cycle that we're going to see this year.
You mentioned the US Fed, and apart from their chair butting heads with the US president, with US fiscal deficits remaining high and treasury supply surging, how do you manage duration and liquidity in an environment where traditional safe haven bonds like US treasuries may not be so safe?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question, right? And the upshot is that we need to be at the right part of the curve. Okay, so as I said, there's going to continue to be lots of bond issuance. So if there is lots of bond issuance and, you know, from time to time, the market doesn't necessarily absorb it at the current price, then, you know, why do we need to be at the point of most pain, i.e. longer dated bonds, right? So if we're there at the short end, you know, picking up the yield for not a great deal of price risk from duration, then it gets to the point where it's just maths. You know, the maths at the short end are very, very good. 1 year, 2 year, 3 year duration bonds earning maybe 5, 6, 7%. And, you know, you kind of weigh those risks together. And actually, you know, that's quite a good return, really. So we just don't need to be in the riskier parts of the market out there in the longer dates of the curve.
Jono, or I should rather say Jonathan, because I'm actually giving away how well I know you. How should advisors position this strategy as a core income anchor, a flexible bond play, or something else?
Well, I think it goes back to where's your starting point? And I think it's been really instructive when we go to this sort of citywide events, which you team put on so brilliantly, is when we go to these events, there's 8, 10, 12, 15 sponsors. Almost 90% of the sponsors are all global equity managers, which I think is instructive. It means that the industry's grown up on this equity exposure for the last 10 or 15 years. And you know what? It's been the right thing to do. But over the last few years, asset classes are repricing. You know, the US exception trade is now being questioned. And I think what's happening is investors now need to realize, actually, what I used to do was go, I'll buy domestic South African equities, domestic South African bonds, and then I'll go and buy global equities. Because there was no other trade in place. There is another trade now. The fixed income global developed market credit is now a genuine balancer to the portfolio. So the next question is how much risk do you want to take in that? Because you can take your equity, global equity risk, which everyone is now doing by bending their offshore exposure or international exposure through global equities. As Lloyd just talked about, what we're trying to do is provide a nice counterbalance to that. So do we want to offer a risky fixed income fund that moves duration about all over the place and moves around the asset classes? No. What we're trying to do is create a smooth return, a low volatile income generating strategy. So therefore, you can have this fund and put it in the part of the portfolio and it acts as a ballast to what's going on in the rest of your portfolio. So we regard it as kind of a core ballast approach.
Lloyd, John, I just spoke about credit. There's a wall of high yield maturities coming between 2025 and 2027. Are you concerned about refinancing risk and are investors being paid enough to take that risk today?
It's a very good question. Now, it really depends on the health of the broader market, I think. You know, if the market remains very liquid, then I think we'll get through this refinancing hump okay with some restructurings, with some defaults, but it's not going to cause a big problem. If the market is less liquid for any reason, and there's reasons to think in future it might not be, then actually, you know, high yield itself becomes almost a levered version of the market, right? Because we're going to get quite a few companies then that actually won't be able to refinance, you know, because, you know, at this very point in time, we are seeing some companies refinance and, you know, it doesn't make sense to us. Mm. You know, the lifetime of the bonds they are actually able to print, they quite possibly may refinance, may restructure those bonds. So I think it's not without risk. And, you know, your question again about spreads, do we get paid? No, we don't get paid an awful lot more to be in high yield over investment grade. So we've got a big preference for investment grade over high yield. You know, and part of that is valuation. Part is the fact that actually, you know, these highly levered companies in high yield are having to pay a lot more now to actually borrow money.
Speaking of which, what's the rationale behind that? And how do you weigh credit quality versus structural subordination?
So the rationale behind the kind of strength of the credit market in general, I think, and by extension, the strength of high yield, is actually the fact that, you know, in credit, we are getting very, very good real returns. You know, we are getting very good inflation-busting returns. Mm. And, you know, for that reason, even though credit spreads are relatively tight, you can't not be invested. Because as I said earlier, at the shorter end, it's just maths. That's all it is. You know what you're getting. You know it's you've got the ability to compound up an inflation busting return. And so then you know, we need to weigh up, are we getting paid enough to be in the risky companies versus, you know, the less risky companies? And we're not. But there's no need to be in those risky companies anyway, because even in the less risky companies, we are able to compound up a positive real return and inflation-busting return.
John, when we met at Fan Court what, a month or so ago, you mentioned that bond seasoning, and I'm putting this in inverted commas, affects secondary market liquidity. How do those dynamics influence your sizing and exit strategy, especially in a concentrated high conviction portfolio?
Well, I'm going to pass on straight to Lloyd, because I would be wrong of me to steal your thunder here.
Yes, I mean, when we look at the strategy and what we actually invest in, you know, roughly 75% of the bonds we buy are in primary. And when, you know, there's no cost to actually buying bonds in primary. So that helps the return. But two, as you kind of rightly say, over time, bonds get less liquid because they kind of get locked down in insurance companies and pension funds and, you know, buy and hold asset managers and, you know, other parts of the bond market. And so, you know, the liquidity, you know, in that kind of maybe first week, first month, first 6 months of a bond's life is actually really good. And so, you know, that gives us the ability, if we are buying bonds in primary, that gives us the ability to actually trade out of the bonds, book a profit, you know, because that's really what we want to be doing. We want the liquidity. We want to be in the liquid parts of the market. So we want the liquidity so bonds actually reprice in the first instance, and then we're actually able to book a profit on them at some point in the future.
And I think, I mean, maybe to elaborate here, I think one of the key points, if you draw a chart in front of a piece of paper and have a curve, a line that sort of goes up to sort of bottom left to top right, sort of elliptical curve going up, that would be the shape of every bond. Every company would have its bonds priced along that curve from 0, 3, 5, 10 year duration or length of maturity, wherever the case may be. And what Lloyd and the team are trying to do is that every new issue that comes to market needs to be priced attractively compared to the market in order to get that issue away and find the people who are going to buy that bond. So if you have this curve, what Lloyd and the team are trying to do is buy bonds which are wide of that curve.
Yeah.
And so if you buy them in the primary market, hopefully, there's, as you buy them cheaper than the curve or wider of the curve, as those bonds get repriced, because now you're getting price transparency, et cetera, and price discovery, then that's where you make those returns. And of course, as long as that market's liquid in the first few months after issuance, which it is for you, then you can get those bonds away to the next person.
John, you're talking about your selection process across the globe. How do ESG factors, and ESG has kind of been the buzzword for the last few years, Donald Trump has sucked some of that buzz out of it, but it's still buzzing, play into your credit selection process? Do they shape exposure or just influence sizing?
Well, Lloyd, that would be you and the team.
Yeah, I mean, they don't influence sizing. So we've effectively got a negative screen. And, you know, it will screen out the dirtiest companies, for example. In reality, then there's companies that are either in or they're out. And so, you know, it just influences what we invest in, but not necessarily the size.
Lloyd, you use derivatives mostly for hedging, but they can also add complexity. How do you ensure that derivatives enhance rather than undermine your risk profile?
Yeah, I mean, we're very relatively simple, really, in terms of how we use derivatives. You quite rightly say it's in the main, it's just for hedging. So we will use a CDS index, which is incredibly liquid, works very well as an overall portfolio hedge, and is actually correlated to the assets that we own. So, you know, that keeps things that keeps things relatively simple. And then, you know, the other side is that we are managing duration of the portfolio with interest rate futures. Again, you know, a market with an awful lot of depth. You know, there's plenty of arbitrage strategies out there that arbitrage the difference between, you know, the futures market and the actual cash US treasuries or bunds, for example. And so, you know, that's a very efficient market. And actually, it's a lot more liquid than buying US treasuries themselves or German bunds, for example. So in reality, on the derivative side, we are keeping things pretty simple.
So let's go back to you, and I want to bring it back to the South African audience. The Strategic Monthly Income Bond Fund, where is it available? Where and how is it available?
No, so thank you. So essentially, so far, having only just had that registration back in November, so we're now engaging with the platforms. And as always, as in any market I've been in, whether it's UK or Ireland or Europe or Nordics, wherever we've been, the demand to get funds on platforms is driven by the advisors and the wealth managers themselves. So we are now finding clients are now buying directly from us. If you're a fund of fund, for example, institutional client, you tend to find you're booking through your own nominees or through your own fund of fund structures. I think for the wider advisory market, then clearly, if you want to buy it, you would need it from the platform. And so therefore, we are in the middle of conversation now with 7 or 8 of the major platforms in South Africa and just going through that process now.
Okay. As a last question, and it's a question to you both, looking ahead to 2026, what's the single measure of success that would tell you Premier Miton's fixed income business that they've made meaningful impact in South Africa?
Right.
Start.
I'll let Lloyd go and then I'll finish off.
All right.
I think that there's an understanding of the strategy from investors. And, you know, we're actually getting feedback from investors that there's an understanding and, you know, they're buying the strategy because they can see actually the defensive nature of the strategy. You know, and then I guess two is the fact that, you know, I suppose we're seeing support for the strategy. You know, that would be, that would be good.
I think there's twofold. I think this is a really interesting question to ask because I used to work for M&G, so I know South Africa very well through M&G's connections. And I think this market, as I said at the beginning, is so overly broke or overbroke with global equity funds, some wonderful global equity funds being promoted to South African investors, some great track records. But it's been so dominated with global equities for all the understandable reasons since 2008. So I think, and then again, domestically, you've had very attractive annuity rates domestic South Africa, and you've had very attractive domestic South African bonds to buy. So for me, it's about the educational process, as Lloyd referred to, is that there is a market out there right now, which perhaps hasn't been attractive for 15 years post-2008, that is now attractive again. And it is global developed market credit. And I think if we can win that intellectual argument that actually there is a space in the portfolio to diversify, you don't need to take all your international exposure through global equity and that risk. And then as Lloyd rightly points out, as people understand that we have a differentiated way of managing money, you might well already buy one of the other global fixed income managers that are out there. But actually, the way Lloyd describes and the team, how they describe how they invest in fixed income, it's different. It's a differentiator. So either treat us as a core ballast within client portfolios or use us as a blend with some of the other great fixed income managers that you might be using out there, because I know we do things differently because I haven't seen any other investment team that run money in that way. And so success for me is things like Fancourt, is going there and people walking up to me, hugging me, shaking me by the hand, and seeing that we are now being seen to be part of the community. The trust is building up. And actually, as a consequence of our most recent visit, you know, we're getting incoming emails and inquiries saying, right, you're now registered. I've seen you 4 or 5, 6 times now. You come down to Cape Town, to Joburg, to Durban, to George. We know you're committed to South Africa. Right, now we trust you. Now we understand what your fund does, as Lloyd says. Now we're prepared to commit to giving money to you, you know, and that's the journey, and just continuing that journey. That's a great success.
Well, that's music to me, to my ears, and makes me very, very happy. Thank you, Jonathan and Lloyd, for being in studio today and for hosting me in your backyard for a change and bringing this good weather with you.
Thank you for bringing this good weather.
To all our CityWire South African listeners or viewers in this regard, thank you very much for tuning in to this episode of Money, Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uester, and my producer, Vera Loba da Silva, from the CityWire Studios team. If you like this episode, please subscribe, leave a message, and share it with your network. The audio version will be available on all major platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and iHono.fm. The vodcast will be available on our website at www.cui.co.za. And with that, and until next time, goodbye.